Do you notice that James always fixing his hair when he got the ball?
Yes. he chucks it out and then goes back to fixing his hair.
Fixes his hair. Goes, oh, I better catch this ball. Catches it with two hands, which the ball's been kicked like 60 metres. Catch with two hands. Gives a perfect pass to Hugo and then goes fixing his hair again.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, you're in the middle of a Six Nations game.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome along to House of Rugby together with Bank of Ireland. I'm Greg O'Shea and the team is back together after an awesome Six Nations weekend. Lindsay and Jason are in the room. Lindsay, my love, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm very, very good.
All the better for seeing you and Jason.
And Jason, how are you, brother?
Best part of your week. Good pal. Enjoying a good weekend.
Yeah, you watched all the rugby, I presume.
Yeah, well, it's only one game that mattered, but of course I watched the whole lot, but what a game, lads.
Unbelievable stuff. Like, we will definitely get stuck into that. That's going to be the bulk of this episode,
yes,
guys.
It is.
What a game. But before we even talk about that, our very own Pat was in the Aviva Stadium and he got chatting to the captain of Ireland, Johnny Sexton, and also the head coach, Andy Farrell. So that's coming up later in the podcast. So definitely wait for that. It'll be a good little chat. But Ireland won 32-19, guys. I did think Ireland would win, but I didn't think it would be by that margin. Like, unbelievable stuff, Lindsay, wasn't it?
I was given 5 points or less. That because, you know, that's been kind of, you know, with two top teams, I was like, there's no way it's going to be anything more than that. I think I was like, a penalty here, penalty there, someone just getting the rub of the green. But by God, like, I don't know about you, lads, I'm absolutely exhausted this morning. I was like, God, what a weekend. You know, I felt like I was playing every single phase with them. You know, and I'm sure you're the same. Like, I know you were in the stadium. The atmosphere was electric, wasn't it?
Yeah. It so me and you were in the stadium. And it was just, I was kind of worried because, you know, rugby's getting to the point now where it's getting a little bit corporate. And there's people at games like that that have been given tickets because they're involved in some business, but they don't actually give a crap about the rugby. And they haven't come up from the grassroots. Yeah. But you got there and walking into the stadium and even like the chanting beforehand and halftime, there was just a buzz, like, because the game from minute one was actually incredible as well, wasn't it?
And I was on the dart actually on the way over and I took opportunity. I was surrounded by a couple of French lads from Toulouse and they were like, they had the French beret on, they had their face painted and I just couldn't resist. And I was like, how do you think you do today, lads? And I wasn't dressed in any gear. So like, oh no, we will win. And I was like, oh, I have a tissue here actually. I think you should hang on to that because I think it's going to be Ireland's day. So I was just winding them up on the dart on the way over. But you know what's lovely? We shook hands. We wished everyone luck and it was just a great day. And there was did you see the corner, the French fans from kind of top to bottom of the East Stand, I think it was, they were just bouncing from start to finish and they were really creating the atmosphere.
I couldn't get over how many French people were there. It was honestly like, I thought, it was like, are we in Paris by any chance? Like the chanting was huge. And when they were doing that jumping up and down that you're talking about, I was like, dude, they're very good. Like, they must have come in their thousands.
Oh, yeah. And when Le Bastille came on, like, it was just like, we're in, like, Paris. It was just like the sound reverberated around us. Like, the hairs went up in the back of my neck and I was like, oh, it's a test match today, boys.
Unfortunately, I think the supporters, we lost the battle against the French supporters, but at least we won on the pitch. That's all that matters.
I think we were so nervous. Yeah. That's what I think. Like, people around me, I could see them kind of like this lovely glistening glow of sweat. Like, you know, on their forehead. I was like, it's all right, we got this.
Yeah. Jason, you watched it at home.
Yeah, I think that's exactly how I feel. I mean, look, the last time we were on this show, I was saying I'm worried about Wales, I'm worried about Gatland, and they went out like and made me eat my words and absolutely smashed Wales with a bonus point in the Principality. And going into this game then again, like, you're coming up against a French team that hasn't lost in over 12 months, who are favourites for the World Cup. And I know that we're at home and we're, you know, going into this game like fired up, but I was still worried.
Yeah.
I think for the first time ever, and I hate to say this, I'm not apprehensive anymore. I'm coming off the fence. Like, we are that good. Yeah. I know we've said this before and we go, oh, this time feels different. We are that bloody good at the moment. It's actually frightening. That first 40 minutes of rugby, just from 1 to 15, the tries that we scored, the manner in which we played, everything about the game was just, that was the two best teams in the world playing at the weekend. And we're now the best team in the world and we've proved that, which is, it's just incredible.
It is absolutely incredible. Like, there's a gap between number one and number two. Like, there was a good beating. Like, France turned up and they had a fully stacked team. And we also had injuries. Like, you forget, probably the best player in the world, arguably Tadhg Furlong, was missing. He's such a pivotal player. Healy was missing. Gibson Park was missing, who's our starting nine. Dan Sheehan's probably our starting hooker. And Henshaw was out. Five guys that you could argue that would have started.
Top players.
And we still smashed the best team in the world. They had all their top guys playing.
Yeah.
I was actually completely taken aback by it. And fellas that wouldn't have usually stepped up in the past, but always just kind of filled in, like Herring and Beelum and McCluskey. Mm. They were like some of the best players on the pitch, weren't they, Lindsay?
Well, yeah, like we've said it for week on weeks, building up to this, I suppose, Six Nations tournament, that the key for Ireland and the exciting part for us is the depth. You know, we can see the depth in the provinces, but I think we clearly saw the depth and maturity now coming through for those lads who've been waiting very patiently, you know, and grinding away. I think the variation of our tries was exceptional. You know, last week we grinded out a win against a very dogged Welsh team. You never know where you're at in a Six Nations until your first game. But obviously we had the dogged try by Porter. We had the kind of, and a bit unfair, and fair play to Dave Kilcoyne, corrected us after the game. We were like, oh, it was very Joe Schmidt-esque in the Keenan try. And he said, no, that's a fast try. And I loved that about him, the loyalty and the buy-in. And they were just brilliant. And I just think, yeah, I'm a bit like you. I'm off the fence now. I think it's the apprehension, because you just don't want to dream. You don't want to dream because you don't want the heartbreak, you know. But I think our defence, I thought Hugo Keenan's positioning, because... Now, I'm a forward, so when I saw the kick, and I was like, Jesus Christ, if I was the prop now, I'd be like, will you stop kicking, because you're running and you're running. But like, we won that battle for territory and our position was exceptional. Our attack, I just didn't think at any stage we're going to lose the game. Mm. Do you know?
I think there was a period, like, which I think is a period I'd like to watch back the game again, but I remember like watching it live. There was a period for about 20 minutes in the second half where you could see all of a sudden, there was guys were starting to slow down. The speed of up was getting really slow. There was a lot of missed tackles, and you're kind of like, oh shit, here we go again, kind of a job. And France worked their way back into the game. That, you know, they were within it was 6 or 7 points at that stage.
It was 25-19, like, I think.
And you're kind of like, we're in trouble here. Yeah. We're in big trouble here. And I really did think we were in trouble. And Irish teams in the past, like, would have fell to that, and they would have fallen back, and then France would have taken the lead. But they just grinded it out, kept playing. And then a moment of magic from Doris. He reminds me of, like, it's like playing rugby 08, like, and it's that guy with that star over the top of his head. And you can just press L1, R1, try whatever button you want to press, and he'll just go. Because if you look back and watch that pass, like, the position he's in to be able to throw, it's, what is it, a 15, 20 metre pass out to Ringrose. And then Ringrose then to bounce off three players, like they weren't even there. I mean, that handoff to the chest to Jalabert, like, or it wasn't, sorry, not Jalabert, it was Penno. I mean, like, at the finish.
Yeah. No, it was Jalabert.
Sorry, it was Jalabert, apologies. Yeah. So I got it right the first time. Yeah. But just the quality of that try in the end then, like, and then you knew it was, okay, don't doubt these boys no more.
But did you know what I loved? Kerry Ringrose, it was like his newborn child. I could see him. He hugged that ball like no one was getting off him. As soon as he got by the three tackles, he just hugged it and he made sure that
there's actually a photo. I sent that to Pat tomorrow. We'll put it in the post edit and you can just see it. He's there holding the ball, smiling, and you see the three French guys on the ground just looking up at him. Like, and they're
please
and
don't
you're
do
like,
it.
This is like a painting.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, hanging in the Louvre. it was Fico, Jalabert, and Penel all lying on the ground looking up at Kerry Ringrose. And it just encapsulates the whole day, like, and they're three top class players, like, do you know, it's not as if he's running around boys, like, these are some of the best players
in
the
world.
How
good is he though?
Yeah,
like, you think Gary Ringrose is like, and I think, I'm not sure it was you, Pat, someone posted like Gary Ringrose up for this game, and he's like, you know, before the game he's slicing his hand, you know, and he's nearly picking out his victims. He's like, I'm gonna get you. And you just think, he had a great game the last day, you know, he was probably player of the match. And then he just brings it up another level. Like, he was unbelievable. He bounced off Fiku once, I think, in the game. And I was like, oh God, I thought he knocked himself out. Mm. After that, he was just absolutely exceptional.
He's top class, absolutely top class. And what I think is we need to really acknowledge is that France were giving respect to Ireland in the sense they were taking their points. So they weren't kicking to the corner and going for the line. Oh, we're going to try here. They were like, we got a penalty, we better take our points here. And Ramos was kicking like... unbelievably.
You need a drop goal not at one stage, like, so un-French-like for him to be goal for something like that. You're like, they're afraid here. Like.
Yeah, no.
They were. It was like they were afraid. Afraid's probably reaching too far now, but they were showing a lot of respect to Ireland, being like, every time we get into the half, we need to come away with points because we're not going to beat these guys. And they were leading at one stage, but Ireland just kept chipping away, and we scored, what was it, four tries we scored?
Yep,
four
bonus
tries
point.
Four tries to one, and incredible tries. You talked about the Gary one, which was the last one, but let's go back earlier in the game, that Hugo Keenan try.
Unbelievable.
I've watched it back so many times. I'm like, that it came off a counter attack. Mm. And did you notice that James O was fixing his hair when he caught the ball?
Yes. he chucks it out and then goes back to fixing his hair.
Fixes his hair. Goes, oh, I better catch this ball. Catches it with two hands, which the ball's been kicked like 60 metres. Catch with two hands. Gives a perfect pass to Hugo and then goes fixing his hair again.
Yeah.
I'm like, bro, you're in the middle of a Six Nations game. Just shows how chill he is. Like, you know what I mean?
Totally chill. But I asked that, you know, it was this something they had obviously identified. It wasn't the first time they'd given that inside ball. So they'd obviously identified the French pillar.
Yeah, like leaves that, that's something they must have spotted in the French game, because, okay, when we're coming back with a counterattack, when they're kicking, when they're clearing their lines, that there is this space there. Because if you look at, okay, one thing we have to give credit for, I said this before we come on air, is the carry by Doris in the lead up to that. He does some massive footwork and then carries hard. I think it's Jalonge or something he comes into, and he drives him back about 10 metres.
Yep.
And then that sets the whole thing up, because all of a sudden they're on the back foot now, suddenly. They didn't expect this. And if you look at it, like, it's like Beelum. I would kind of say, as good as Detroit was, that it wasn't really, it wasn't the best defence from France. Because if you look at it,
Antonio is just like getting up.
It looks like he's running through like a walkthrough in before the game, because he doesn't even look to carry. He just stops like this and then pops it up. Only for Keenan coming on at such pace, I would be a bit upset. Like, for a team that's trying to go into the World Cup, like, go into a home World Cup and are expecting to be the favourites. Mm. They shouldn't have conceded a try like that. And that's not taking the credit away from Ireland. They shouldn't have.
Oh, no, they obviously identified it, because that wasn't the first time they ran that, you know, that gap at the pillar. Mm. I must look at it, but, like, there was a couple of times they ran it. But the other bit, it wasn't only Keenan. There was, like, three lads ran such hard lines. They, like, bamboozled. They just sat all the French down. And the French were obviously scrambling onto the open side, thinking, oh, we're short numbers here. Antonio was a bit lazy now. He's, like, you know,
there's
nonchalantly.
Space there, like.
It was huge. Look, you identified the gap, you go. Yeah. And I would agree. Beelum was like, right. He was like a lad so concentrated. He's like, right, no. Yeah. Here. Okay, I did what I needed
to
do.
Didn't even look as in make it out. So, oh, I'm gonna carry here. He just kind of went.
Yeah.
So I was like, Jesus, I mean, that was pretty obvious how pre-planned it was. So I was like, it was
they've done it in Portugal, I think, in their training camp. Obviously, they'd done a bit of video and this was a thing they identified. But look, it was kind of like the French were respectful, but I'm not sure where they were trying to target Ireland other than kicking long and trying to, you know, pin us in. I didn't think there was much that they did differently for us, other than DuPont upped his game again and I thought he was exceptional, to be honest.
Yeah, it was incredible. They definitely had that pre-plan, because they did it on 8 minutes into the game. So they noticed that there was the defensive line of France were quite porous, and they found that gap, and Antonio was just strolling back. But as you said, Beelum, he threw that pass blindly to Keenan, because he couldn't see Keenan coming on the far side. Like, so it was completely scripted, but it worked perfectly. And that's why Andy Farrell is such a good coach. Like, So people are trying to give it to Joe Smith. Joe Smith's gone a donkey's, lads. Yeah. Everyone needs to forget about Joe Smith. This is Andy Farrell's team. Correct. Like, so Joe Smith's gone coaching New Zealand now, so forget about that fella. Another unbelievable try. James Lowe, what a finish, lads. Tom Daly would be proud of that dive. Like, ridiculous, wasn't it?
People are going to ask this question, so we can't sit in the fence, we have to be honest. Was it a try? Was there a little bit of a brush on the grass or not? Because there is angles there, and there is a lot of, like, big respected pundits that are saying, and respected athletes and players that are saying, it wasn't a try. And, like, they're all giving out, like, because we will get onto that later on. We obviously know that the Antonio incident with Herring, like, that was as blatant and as clear a red card.
Oh, I'm gonna argue with that, Noel.
I will get onto that, but, like, there are people saying, like, sure, oh, they can't see turn around because Lowe's try wasn't a try. So for me, if I'm honest, I think there was perhaps a slight brush of his foot before he gets it down. Taking it away from him. I think they made the right decision on the day, because the question was, it wasn't like, is it a try or not? Is there any reason I can't award a try? So I don't think there was compelling evidence to say it wasn't a try. So it was the correct decision. Like, people are saying, oh, it shouldn't have been a try. It was the correct decision based on the question he asked and based on the event. But there is question marks over, did he or did he not? Like, and I think there's a fair argument there to say that perhaps a little bit.
Hang on, I get go, go, gadget eyes, right? Because I don't know how you're going to do that unless the sensors on the grass that are going to beep on you. Do you know what I mean?
Got the decision right, but, like,
I think for to get the timing right, the ball down, and if there was the slightest a brush of leather and grass, right? If
we're being technical,
which we'll never know.
We're being technical here now.
Jesus, we're very pedantic. Very pedantic. Like, you're not going to see a try like that again for a long, long time.
No.
Do you know what I mean? So, for the try, for the absolute Lee Roadie that he has to even try that and think about it, and the way he puts it in one hand like he's an NFL player. Yeah. Like, for those wondering what
Leroy means, it means balls. yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, we've said Africans listen to this. They have no idea what Leroy means.
Right, it's
means.
Balls. Scrotum, yeah. Whatever he needed.
What is he, 6'3", 17, is he about 17 stone?
Yeah, he's built like a back row. I mean, really the lightest winger.
Defy gravity there. Yes. Like, literally defy gravity to hold, to stay in the air that long.
And against Penno, like, who had another.
That's
he was exceptional.
I was thinking, I was like, how has he managed to keep his leg off the ground here? It's like he's floating in midair.
Yeah.
But I'm presuming it's because Penno has hit him so hard. Giving him that extra momentum to literally a whiskers like to get to keep that foot off the ground. And as you're saying, Lindsay, the only way someone's going to spot that is if there's sensors on the grass. Like, so give him the try.
Question marks over that
penalty
tackle as well, in fairness. If he didn't get the try, there's question marks over that tackle. How legal it was.
Probably would have gone back to be a penalty try and a yellow card anyway. Like, so saved ourselves a bit of time because the TMO took forever as well, isn't it?
Mm.
Is there kind of a way, do you think, Jason, that we can speed that TMO up, or does it have to be that way?
To be honest with you, I mean, it's a tough one. I suppose that comes back to what they want to do is give the referees more ownership and give the linesmen more ownership. But then if they get those decisions wrong, then we're going to give out wide into use the TMO. So in terms of speeding it up, I suppose...
There's just no winning, like...
There is no winning. So maybe it's the technology, maybe it's the guys that are there and, like, maybe they need to be a little more ahead, maybe they need more help inside in the TV room and not just have... It's just TMO and his assistant, like, maybe they need more bodies in there, like, and maybe they need more screens so that they can get it quicker, and maybe it's just that they need to see an incident once and, like, act on the decision. Like, as in getting onto that Antonio decision, like, for me, like, that is as clear...
Yeah, well, we can talk about it now, Antonio, our Uni Antonio tackling Rob Herring. And he's absolutely spanks him back. But, like, in fairness, Rob Herring, he takes it. He gets up and he actually catches the ball and passes it on to, I think, whoever was outside him. So he was, wasn't completely wiped out, but it was a massive hit. What do you think, Lindsay?
It was a massive hit. Like, in the letter of the law and
that's going to be on the mic there, Jason.
Sorry.
He's just having a beat while I'm chatting here. If we're going to go letter of the law, like, how Wayne Barnes didn't say it was a high degree of, like, he hit him. Like, what weight is he? He's about 100.
He's lost 100. A bit of weight. Like, but for me,
he's still about 140 kg.
Yeah, it's two guys going in fully upright. He connects shoulder to his chin. Now, Rob Herring went off shortly after that for a HIA and didn't return. So that shows you that there was a high level of danger. There was a high level of force. To me, there's no mitigation there whatsoever because he makes no attempt to lower his tackle out and he connects flush with his chin, with his shoulder.
But see, so he doesn't bring his shoulder up. Like, he could have ended Rob Herring, to be honest, because he is 6'3", I'd say, easily.
But he still connects with his chin.
He does, but the height difference, you see. Now, I'm not condoning this. Yeah. Like, it should have been a red by the letter of the law.
Yeah.
Right. But there's a couple of things. Rob Herring is so short because he doesn't see him, right? So he's not absolutely set. We've all been there and you're like absolutely doubled. You know, even if it's a good tackle, you're absolutely wiped. It does hit him on the chest. I think he could have brought him around and wrap. He tries to try and keep that shoulder down. Mm. But he's a slow tie head, you know.
But he's fully standing up.
He is fully standing up. But I think he made that decision to go and he just hit him. I don't think he was thinking so. Look, you make a decision. It should have been a red.
Yeah.
It should have been a red. And how Wayne Barnes got it so wrong is beyond me. But I think he could have ended him more. So it's one of those. We just have to be consistent with the letter of the law.
If we've been around the show so many times, like if this is a yellow card and like if they don't come out and cite him or don't come out and say, okay, well, we made a mistake, that should have been a red.
Mm.
Like, what do we do next game? Like, why do we keep going back? And why is there so many question marks over? And why are we still arguing? Like, why aren't we just protecting players?
Yeah.
That, like, Rob Herring went off with a HIA. So Rob Herring was injured with a head injury and didn't come back on.
But
it was whatever, like, the tackle was dangerous.
Yeah, but forget about Rob Herring getting injured, like, do you know what I mean? In the sense that, like, we're talking about the incident here. The injury is going to be, like, depending on the person and their predisposition and whatever happens. But, like, I'm talking about the actual tackle. In my opinion, this is going to be unpopular opinion.
Okay.
I think it was a fair enough hit.
I do think an initial thing at the game,
I know you don't agree with that, Jason, but I'm like, you're saying he hit him flush in the chin. I feel like he didn't hit him flush in the chin. Like, he caught him in here on the top of the chest, underneath his neck. And because it was such a good read, he got off the line, got up. And he happens to be, as you said, Lindsay, 140 kg, 6 foot something prop. It's not his fault he's massive. No. If I'd made the same read, I'm 5'10", 80 kg. I'm not going to hit him. If I make just as good as Reed and I hit Rob Herring, that's not, he's not going to get hurt like off me. Your man just happens to be massive, made a good read. And I feel like I had a massive argument with someone in Lanzarote Rugby Club about this afterwards. And we actually just had to walk away from each other. Because I'm just like, we're now punishing someone for making a good read. And I accept your point in the sense that he probably should have dropped his hips a little bit more. But he hasn't completely knocked Rob Herring's neck off. Like, do you know what I mean? He just caught him high. But is the letter of the law, I could be wrong now, is the letter of law that it has to be below chest height or does it have to be below chin height? Like, where's the tackle height?
The tackle height is like it's here and up, like.
Yeah.
Essentially. But like, well, the question I'll ask you just on your point there before we move on is the fact that you said you don't think he connected with his chin or his head or anything like that.
I feel like
chest
he
first.
You connect. How do you feel a HIA from a chest hit?
Because you can be in a car crash and like not hit your head and your brain's rattling against your skull.
I don't think you're going to fail a HIA from a chest hit.
Well, I had the argument with my dad last night. Can I think Rob Herring's concussion is possibly a whiplash one rather than an actual? I'm probably a hypocrite here because I did argue that was a yellow at the time and I still did last night. And so the argument is, right, it should be a red on the letter of the law they're trying to implement, so player safety.
And but what's this letter law? The letter law is if you hit the chin.
Well, a high degree of danger. So I suppose it is a high degree of danger, but at the same time, you've like 140 kg coming at a bit of pace and he's made the read before Rob Herring can kind of even sidestep him. So, I mean, it's going to be a high degree if you're not ready and this basically articulate Larry's going to hit you.
Is that good rugby play out of Antonio? He's red and red.
Well, it's probably an example. And it's not sitting on the fence. It's an example of where we make the decision now on cases like this because it really is a grey area. I think it was chest area. He could have raised his shoulder. It didn't. He kept this right shoulder, which is the first point of contact, down. And I'm saying there has to be some bit of thought there to do that. Because he could have absolutely broke him. Like, he could have ended him.
If
really.
It was an inch higher, Rob Herring in hospital. Oh, Gonzo. Like, yeah.
But I so think that's the grey area.
Just in enough in under his chin, in my opinion. But you're, Jason, of the opinion that it was too high.
100%. 100%. Yeah. If we're on that area then we need to lower it. So maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just so that rule up. Because we shouldn't be having this argument.
It's too close.
We shouldn't be having this argument and go, oh, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. We shouldn't be having... This shouldn't be an argument. It should be that is definitely not a red card or that is a red card. There shouldn't be, as I said, we have a grey area here where we're kind of like, oh, I agree with some of your points, you agree with some of my points, and we're all kind of, but no one can really definitively say
black and white
it was
like,
a red. Yeah, and that's what
And I think we need, it is an example of where we're still at with this. Do you know what I mean? Like, it probably needs to just lower it again to make it clear because, like, I think Wayne Barnes, I was so surprised of all referees that we've ever had that he didn't give a red. I thought that was just going to be clear cut for him.
Yeah.
And I think because of the magnitude of the game and what it could have done to the outcome and taken away from what was an absolute spectacle of rugby, I think that really, would you agree with that? It kind of impacted his decision?
Yeah, potentially because it was such a big game. But like, I mean, this guy is what? He's a barrister, isn't he? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just got to go, okay, it doesn't matter who's playing, doesn't matter who's in front of me, I go by the letter of the law. So like, I mean, he's a barrister, so I'm pretty sure he's familiar with the term law and how it works. So I'm pretty, you know.
Yeah.
But that's my question is what is the ruling that he is the law that he should be working off there?
I don't know exactly what it is like. I mean, I'd have to read it back.
Do you know what I mean? Like, we're getting into specifics here.
The technicality of it, like, is that like, is there a high degree of danger? Was it a high, it's a high tackle. It was a high tackle. Was there a high degree level of danger? Is there mitigation to bring it back down and say that it wasn't? So like, to me, like, it was a high tackle. It was a high level of danger. And to me, I don't think there was any mitigation there, to be honest with you.
See, I think there's a high level of danger because Antonio's so big and he's just made a really good read. And
you can't,
that's what makes it
because
dangerous.
He's so big, that's not mitigation.
But that's my thing is like, that's rugby, man. Get over it. Like, do you know what I mean?
No,
it's a big guy catching another guy with a read.
That's going back now to being like, that's like one of the guys on Twitter who's saying like, rugby's going soft. We need to get that out of the game. Like, that's just rugby. Like, rugby needs to evolve and to become a truly global sport. We need to start understanding that what we did in rugby 5 years ago, what we did in rugby 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, is no longer relevant. We have to keep evolving because there's too many injuries. There's people getting concussed. There's guys getting brain injuries. There's guys getting CTE. And like, there's stuff coming out where guys are coming with like Parkinson's and dementia. And they're even saying that, which is what we've seen in rugby, is MND is becoming like for a quite popular diagnosis.
Yes.
Very popular as a hard word, but you know, a common diagnosis in rugby. And they're bringing that back to head injuries as well. So like we have to evolve. We didn't have this audience before. We have it now. Do we want people in wheelchairs? Do we want people dead? Do we want people with brain injuries?
Rugby yeah, I know what you're saying, and you're getting very dark now. But let's bring it back to the rugby in the sense that, like, I think I do agree what you're saying that it is dangerous. But I think if we're coming to with the rugby we're playing at the moment, I'm like, I just think it's a well-read shot. But maybe we need to make the law to a point where it has to be below chest height.
I think we do.
The nipple ones, like I was saying before, something like that.
Because Greg is right.
We're all chatting, being like, is it chin? Is it not? Is it then like
too small an area to be dealing with? Like between here and here, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there, I do agree with you, right? Because there's always going to be high level of danger compared. Like if you had a 9 against a toy head, like so there's just such disparity in the positions as the frame and the weight of the guys and even women. So that's just the evolution of the game. So to cater for player safety, which we're all advocates for here, I agree, Antonio, if someone like Antonio is just like an articulated lorry coming at you and he's trying not to really hurt someone, I think you have to protect both sides, the attack and the defence, and really make the law clear cut and bring it down, I think, below nipples, because you don't want to ruin the game, but you don't want to ruin it at the expense of players in it. So I think this is, unfortunately, it's a great argument, and I'd say we could stay here all day, but unfortunately it's just highlighting that I think World Rugby need to take control and make more clarity around the ruling of it.
Yeah, it's a perfect time to talk about this new ruling they're bringing in some places with it has to be below hip height.
No, I think that's unrealistic.
That was a mess up. Like they tried to say the waist tackle height, and then, well, I think technically the RFU were trying to bring it in,
but sure there was,
such backlash that they tried to say that we were going by the French directives and our translation was misconstrued and that's not what we really mean. And we're actually now going to go back and talk to the referees and the players who we didn't consult in the first place, who we should have consulted in the first place, and we'll get back to you.
So they did a Michael Jackson on it.
Completely 180.
They did a Michael Jackson on it, yeah.
I think
they moonwalked it.
If we're going to the point where it's below hip height, you're saying, Jason, that I think we're just getting away from rugby then.
No,
we're getting away from the beauty of the game.
100%. I agree with you. Yeah. 1,000,000% there.
And people like Antonio aren't going to be able to play the game anymore, because him to get low and tackle me below hip height, he's never getting down there. Like, I'm a small fella. Like, do you know what I mean?
One thing I will say though is Herring was standing up, and Herring isn't exactly Craig Casey. You know, Herring is, what height is Herring? Is he 5'10, 5'11? Like, and Antonio isn't exactly 7 foot.
I just think he was so blindsided.
There isn't a huge difference there where he made no attempt to lower, and he's coming up against a guy who's fully standing up. It's not like Herring was ducked last minute or slipped into the tackle, where that's where your mitigation would normally come in. There was nothing there. Like, he was just a straight on two guys standing up coming in, and it's not like he was twice the height of him.
Oh my god, Jason!
Hold on, we get them bleepers out.
Jason's very emotional after the weekend, guys, if you haven't noticed yet.
Can everyone send Jason a hug, please? Because he's having a bad morning.
We love the passion, Jason.
Having a mirror this morning.
We love the passion. I do agree with you. Sorry, to kind of summarize, I do agree with you. Antonio should have dropped his height. It is way too close to being like where Rob Herring would be sent somewhere that we don't want him to be sent to. But I thought, in my opinion, I think he was just enough okay. But then again, I'm not the ref, and the ref made the decision. So, do you know what I mean?
Speedy recovery to Rob Herring.
I hope he's okay.
He goes good.
That's the thing, because it could have been a lot worse, in fairness. A cool thing that happened in the game, guys, and it's on the French side of things. What about DuPont pulling Mac Hansen back from the line? What was that about?
I tried to put myself in Mac Hansen's shoes, and I was thinking, this guy is like, yes, the easiest try I'll ever score. Yeah. And next of all, he's holding the ball out and he's like just being reversed. It's like someone had a pulley on him going, rolling him back. It was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Shows his strength again. Like we've had Mac inside the suit on the show. Mac isn't small.
No,
he's a big guy.
Mac's a big guy. What is he? About 6'2". Like, and like, I don't know what weight he is, but
he's definitely over 90
kilos. Definitely over 90 kilos. DuPont like isn't the biggest, but it just shows you, because he's done this time and time again. He is stupidly strong, because he just holds him. It's like a tractor's moving, and you're just holding it with a rope. You're like, I got this.
And the muck is just like spewing. It's just like not moving. Yeah. It was brilliant.
It was like time to slow down. Everyone's like, is he gonna get to the line? Oh,
I know, and I
believe it. Like when you're like, everyone's like, oh, that's such a it's a try. Oh my god, try. And all of a sudden, it's like Mac is just running. His legs are gone from underneath him, and he's just floating in the air. It's like, how is he stopping him here? This is insane.
That was brilliant.
Don DuPont, unbelievable. So stuff, because the build up to that was incredible, because Mac Hansen had intercepted in front of Fekau, whipped it out to Keenan and followed on. Like, so it would have been an incredible try. But in fairness, Mac Hansen took it very well and even restoried your Rugby Joe post taking a piss out of him.
Oh yeah, savings and delicious points.
Delicious points, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Trying to save your money with DuPont is delicious points.
He's got a good crack. Like, he saw the funny side, but like, I mean, he might not have reposted that if we'd lost.
No.
That was a good crack. Was it you that came up with that?
No, it was just forwarded onto me from the lads. I can just chew it up like so.
Check out the Rugby Joe Instagram, guys. It's very funny. A couple of other people that we just want to mention in this game that we're hoping they're doing okay today is Tyburn went off with injuries.
Do we know an update on him?
Don't think he was in an a update boot. Just yet,
I'm
Pat.
Sure,
do we
get one today at some time?
Yeah. I'm wondering, did he do a syndesmosis or something?
Andy Farrell said it's not great.
It's a disaster because how many times this happened to him, and any time he just about gets back up to speed and he gets on form again, he gets hit with another injury. Like, he's been like that his whole career. Like, you feel for him.
And I feel like he was carrying.
If you didn't syndesmosis, you'd probably have to get surgery, and that's then pushing in towards World Cup territory. Like,
well, can you explain what that is? That's sort of
syndesmosis,
for
is your ligament on your ankle.
It brings your foot up and down, so they bring a tight rope. I have one on my left, so you probably haven't
done as well.
It's
very
common.
Don't
say that. Hopefully, this doesn't mean
it's kind of actually a backward tackle. Or I'd say what happened his was, if you poach and you're in that poaching position and you kind of get doubled over, you kind of lean back and snap it.
He'd be like, if he got the surgery now, he'd be back in time for the World Cup. But it's just, if it's one of those prolonged issues, so
I hope
not,
because he's, as I said, he's like one of our most important players. Like, I mean, this guy's in the world dream team of the year. Like, he'd probably he is the best poacher the game in the game at the moment, and we'd massively Munster will miss him, Ireland will miss him.
I'm hoping it's not really that bad. I think he was carrying a bit of a knock though from the Wales game as well. I feel he was a bit.
He's been non-stop all year, don't forget. Yeah, his and he load. Gets through some amount of work, like.
Yeah.
So who would you put in there, guys? Actually, while we're on it, who would you put in to replace him? I mean, Henderson, I don't think Henderson has been, to be honest with you, I think Henderson wasn't great when he came on against Wales and wasn't fantastic when he came on against France. And for me, I'd have a Bard or someone in there instead.
Thank you. I was going to try. I think Bard needs a run now.
Yeah, to be honest with
you. He's athletic. He's tall. He's dynamic in the line out. He's nearly he's that back row playing. He's got a good few poaches. He's starting to read the game that bit better. And I think he needs that experience now at international to kind of fine tune that. But I certainly think he's one of the front runners. I think Henderson, do you take a chance on him? I think we're moving away from the Wales. I think he's going to be a good bench player and experience to have in the squad. Do I think he starts? I think not right now with other players.
Do you think it's just because Henderson has been playing consistently at the top level? He's got a few injuries and he's making his way back. I know he's playing up in Ulster and stuff, but he had a big injury at the start of the year. So maybe it's just he's not in form. But at the end of the day, he is a Lions player.
He hasn't played much rugby this year. Like, but he's you know, he's kind of pushing on, like, and giving away a lot of penalties. And you've got someone like young and hungry like Bard, who there's 10, 15 years ahead of him, and like, Bard is just.
He's different gravy
Henderson
now.
Like 10 years ago, like, and do you want to just keep like dragging out Henderson and leaving him play, or do you want to give a Bard run out, or who else is in there? Like, what else we have? What's
John McCarthy?
Yeah, but he's another man monster who's like the way the game, like the physicality. Like, we brought in the Darvis Carey. When you have someone making that gain line and bringing that defensive line, and like you said, creating that porous and the gaps for you, that's what you want. And I think Henderson is going to be a good 20 minutes, like, to close out a game.
Yes,
he's not up to the pace right now that we're playing. I'd say this is the quickest version of the game that Ireland have ever played, and it's suiting us, you know. And we've athletes there, and that's not to undermine again what Ian Henderson has done, but we said it before with Conor Murray and the likes, you're an exceptional player, but you're only as good as your last game, and we need to create the culture. And I think Faz has done that. I'm going to call him Faz now because I feel wrong.
Bard's playing a lot of rugby at six for Leinster this year, like, so that means he's really up to that pace.
Absolutely.
Like, going into second row. But just as you mentioned there, like, lads, we have to say, I mean, like, you've been saying it long enough, like, it's time we finally said it. Like, Conor Murray, like, and especially what happened to him this week with his dad having a serious accident out in Patrick's
Way. He was brilliant.
You know, and for him, like, he did. That, like, he was passing the ball like Conor Murray back like 5, 6, 7 years ago. Absolutely. Like, that's some of the best rugby I've seen him play. Like, I mean, not only like to be, if you go through the last few months he's been through, like, to be dropped by Munster, to be question marks whether or not you're in the Ireland squad, to all of a sudden then be thrown against Wales. And he was really good against Wales. But then against France the weekend after, like, when your dad just been a serious accident, to be one of the best players on the pitch. Not only because you're not with your dad an accident, but, like, before that people are saying, like, does he still have it? So, oh, like, absolutely. He proved everyone wrong, like, and fair play to him.
And that's what you want. Yeah. But I think we should take opportunity to just wish Mr. Murray, Jerry Murray, I believe
Jerry Murray,
is his name, and all the Murray family a speedy recovery, and fair play to Connor. Like, that's to put your personal issues and your dad and the accident to one side and go out for your country is testament to the man he is.
So, well, come here, you're the only one here that would never doubt him. Like, so for, like, you know, I think he proved you right, like, and proved us very much wrong.
I've always been a Murray fan, in fairness, with some resilience out of him, like, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's incredible. Like, as I said, like, I mean, look, we know like what he's done in the past, like, and we're like, you don't lose that. And maybe he, you know, he has had a tough period with form, and there has been, like, you know, not just that, but Gibson Park has been playing really well, and like Craig Casey is a fantastic nine. So, like, you know, I mean, like, you know, time moves on.
Yeah.
But, like, it does, but class is permanent.
That's it. Yeah, nice.
But you wouldn't want to be given the nod for just on your reputation, would you? Or would you prefer to play?
No, you obviously want to be playing at the top.
And that's
of
what
your
I mean. No one's going to undermine. No one here undermine Conor Murray, but he need a kick up the bum. I mean, you're like, what, the longevity of him, and he just propelled the stature of the nine, and he set that bar, and like, he can do it again. Like, it's not undermining the, like, class is permanent, like you said, but I think as an athlete and as to test yourself, you want that kick up the arse with someone chasing you.
I think in years gone by, like in Munster and Leinster and Ireland, even, like, you were just given that shot, and you were there based on your name. Yeah. Whereas that you don't get those get mays anymore. Like,
nope.
if you've won by a game, you're dropped because there's like three or four players behind you waiting to take your jersey.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he knows that now. Like, when I get in, I have to play well.
Yeah. And he's done it.
Yeah.
Fair play to him.
Yeah. No. Well done, Murray. And as we said, it's bigger than rugby. I hope your father's okay and he's recovering well, and you and the family are doing well. Some resilience, out of you, man. Fair play to you. Yeah, and who came on after him? Casey had an incredible 25 minutes with Ross Byrne. Good to see that halfback partnership going really, really well.
How do you think Ross Byrne did?
I thought he was class.
Absolutely, wasn't he?
Really well level-headed, showed a lot of maturity. And so much that I was like, all right, Sexton goes off, it's totally fine.
Mm. I was really pleased, not to see Johnny Sexton going off, but that he got a good 20 minutes to have that partnership, to kind of take the reins. There was no drop in the standard. He just came on, he did the basics very well. He was confident, he kicked well.
Yeah, a couple of big kicks,
really
some pressure kicks,
big
tough
kicks.
Ones as well.
Yeah. Always looking, really confident with ball in hand, like, wasn't afraid to take it to the gain line, which I liked to see. I love that from him on Saturday, because I think that's something that he's just lacking as regards the comparison section. Yeah. Just really getting players into that gap.
I feel like his gameplay, even though it was always class, I think it's really matured now, in the sense that he's confident on the pitch. He's making things happen rather than just, he's not getting through the game, he's actually running the game.
Yes.
And same with Casey as well. I thought the two of them were incredible coming off the bench. But lads, we could keep talking about this game. We've been talking about it for a long, long time. So let's get Sexton and Farrell to talk about it, because their very own Pat were chatting to them. Listen to this clip, guys.
First half was, wasn't it? He was, wow, he was just end-to-end stuff, and we all hoped it would be like that, and it certainly was, wasn't it? You know, end-to-end, and yeah, even though I thought field position-wise we controlled it pretty well in the end, you know, it's not over till it's over, isn't it? You know, probably until the 78th minute or something like that, you know, you're thinking, you know, we've won a titanic game in that respect. So, unbelievably proud of the lads, of what they've been through over the last 3 weeks. And I know that they dug in hard, and it meant a lot to them today. And they certainly showed that.
What one of three?
Pardon?
What one of three?
Oh, the character more than anything. If you're talking about the bigger picture stuff, I mean, the fight, the want to cover each other's back, to show the togetherness and the spirit that we know we've got, and show it to everyone else in world rugby was there to be seen. You know, we could talk for hours in that regard, of instances and people playing not too much rugby and coming back and putting in performances like that when the chips are really down in big games. It shows a lot of character.
It was a good set play. Coaches obviously came up with it, and yeah, it's a great line by Hugo, and a great pass by Finlay. So it's lovely to see things like that pay off, you know what I mean? And to put in the work, because sometimes, you know, you've got your set piece, your D, you've got all these things, that, and, you know, it'd be easy to overlook a goal line dropout just to say, just chuck it up, lads, and we'll get back into our shape. So great finish by him, and he was outstanding again. It's clear from the start what we want to achieve. Like, you know, it goes unsaid, but everyone knows what we want to do. We won a triple crown last year, and we want to go better this year. That's what we speak about, keeping the trajectory like this as opposed to in 2019 when we dipped. So to get better is to win a championship or a Grand Slam, of course.
So the next game we want to talk about, guys, is Scotland versus Wales. Not as exciting as our Ireland-France game, but we have to talk about it because it's part of Six Nations. So Scotland won at home 35-7, and Dan Biggar set himself up for failure, guys. I don't know if you heard what he was saying before the game, but he said, Scotland played well last week against England, but according to you guys, I presume talking to the media, they are the best team in the world, aren't they? We will have to see how they go on Saturday. If they can back it up, the pressure's all on them. Well, the pressure was on him, Dan Biggar, and you got absolutely hammered, my friend. 35-7.
Yeah, I think he just took a big stick there and poked that Scottish bear because they got their arse handed to them. It's embarrassing now for Wales at this stage. I thought, like, I was worried last week and I was like, all right, Warren Gatland will do this, but this week just reaffirmed. Now, that's not take away from Scotland. I mean, two back-to-back wins to start a championship since 1996, huge. And they have had two really classy games. Finn Russell was another level. And they scored another four tries themselves, bonus point wins. So can't take it away from Scotland, but Wales are in dire straits.
Yeah, it's sad to see. Like, and they dropped a lot of their kind of top fellas. Like Tipperick wasn't playing, Alwyn Jones wasn't playing, a couple of other heads. And Wales just seemed out of sorts, didn't they, Jason?
Yeah, well, look, it was very much like Wales were very poor, but like, you know, not taking the credit away from Scotland, like it was very much the Finn Russell show.
Was it?
It's probably one of the most complete performances from a 10 you're going to see. I mean, there's just something about him. Like, it's just...
What about his offload?
I mean, like, I think the best part about that is if you look at it, he probably could have scored that himself.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, it looks better for me to do this. And he did that. But, like, no, I mean, like, to be honest with you, the pressure was on Scotland because Scotland have been here time and time again where they get a big result and then the following week, then they lose. And that was the thing. It is the last, before this game, the last two times they'd beaten England, the first game on Six Nations, they lost to Wales the second time.
Yeah.
Two times in a row.
Lindsay said there, it's the first time they've won their first two games since 1996.
Yeah, 27 years.
Yeah. 27 Six Nations campaigns. And
holy
the
Lord.
Pressure was on them, like, and they're finally done. Like, and Scotland now, like, are 10 points out of 10, the same as Ireland.
Yeah, they're sitting pretty with us.
Two bonus point wins. But I think someone said it to me there on the week, one of the lads. So, like, I was saying it before the Wales game, like, I was like, you know, it's Warren Gatland, like, you know, we should be worried of something up his sleeve, like, but he likened it to his, like, I think what you have is you got, like, what Gary Neville taught when Jose Mourinho was around, and Jose Mourinho was past it. I think poor Gatland is past it because the same thing happened with the Chiefs, and there was question marks with him over that line, that most recent Lions tour as well, where it's kind of like he's out of ideas and maybe the game has passed him out. And I know he doesn't have the best batch of players there at the moment, but, like, I know Ospreys are flying high in the Champions Cup, but it just looks like he's in over.
Do you think he's had enough time with them to shake it up and make
probably not? Probably not. But maybe, like, as in, okay, maybe it's an unfair way of putting it. Maybe it's just that, like, in years gone by, someone like a Gatland could come in and make that impact very quickly.
Okay.
But I don't think he can anymore. I don't think he has that power anymore. Like, maybe.
No, and I think you're right. I think it's a combination of he hasn't evolved with the game.
Yeah.
But I also don't think he's the players there to do that, even if he wanted.
Yeah.
Like, I think we, you know, time and time again over the last two seasons anyway, we have alluded to the fact that Wales rugby is in such disarray. Their provinces were performing so poorly in the URC. Like, other than Rio Dyer and what's his name, Jack, the back row, like, I don't think anyone's really come up even close to being, like, look what we're producing. You know, we talk about the Ryan Barrs, the Craig Gacy's, like, who's come up for Welsh rugby and said, oh, here I am, I'm the new kid on the block?
Yeah.
Nobody really, do you know?
It's not a great situation for Wales, but, like, give him a bit of time. Give Gatland a bit of time. He basically came in just before the Six Nations started. And same with Steve Bortwick, who we'll chat about England in a while. He's still kind of figuring it out with England. Like, so I suppose you got to give these guys a bit of time. But I do hear what you're saying there, Jason. Is he past it? Has he come back and opened up a book he didn't need to open again?
Yeah, maybe. Like, maybe he's just going to tarnish his legacy and tarnish his reputation by coming back. But
I think so.
You know, I mean, it doesn't look good for him. You know, from whatever way you look at it, it's like you've got a hell of a job on your hands that you probably shouldn't have taken, maybe.
No. Yeah,
because Bortwick has a pool of players. Like, he just needs to now get them singing off the same hymn sheet and playing his style of rugby. So he's very different, that he's loads of choices. But I don't see what pool of players now are going to ignite Welsh rugby. Like, there's nothing. There's either an old batch who've created a legacy and there's nothing coming up to create a new one.
Yeah, they're kind of relying on the old heads, like the George Norton, the centre, and
Alan. Sure, he's injured every week. He's injured again.
But if you look at that, the team he put out against Ireland, like it was like looking like a Wales team that was put out like in 2009
that's
or something.
Yeah, he won last won the championship.
You know what I mean? So he tried that the first week, and then he brought in younger players, and then Bortwick seems to be adapting the opposite, where Bortwick is bringing in young players. Yeah. But for me, I think I don't know if that's going to work with England, because it feels like he's at the start of a World Cup cycle.
I know. You're right.
You're 6 months away from the World Cup. You don't have
time. It's a bit late to be doing that.
To be bringing
that,
guys in and getting them up. You should just go, okay, let's tighten the ship and let's get a good, solid, strong England team that has a chance of doing well in the Six Nations and going somewhere in the World Cup and then start again fresh.
Well, maybe. We'll go on to the England game now because we're chatting about this. England beat Italy 31-14 in Twickenham. And England came out really, really well. So they're playing a lot of new young fellas, as you mentioned there. They were 19-0 up at halftime. And we kind of have this new batch of England players, like Jack Willis was incredible. Mm-hmm. Ollie Chesson was top notch as well. We had Arundel came on. We had Mitchell came on. So nice kind of change of the tide with the England guys coming on. But as you're saying there, Jason, you feel like it's too soon to a World Cup to be bringing all these guys into the squad and trying to get them blooded.
That's it. Yeah, Ollie Lawrence, another young guy, was absolutely fantastic. Got man of the match.
Ollie Lawrence at 12, yeah.
Yeah, Ireland at 12. But, you know, as I said, he dropped Marcus Smith and he's got Farrell back in there again. And he's got these younger guys in around the back three and stuff. And he's got a young kind of pack in there. And he's switching a lot of things around where, if it was me, look, come here, who am I to judge Steve Bortwick when you look the job he did with Leicester Tigers in such a short amount of time? Like, they were down in the depths lower than when Munster were all those years ago and brought him back up to win a premiership in a very short space of time. But yeah, looking at England at the moment, I didn't see much of them. 31-14, you're like, oh, England got a bonus point winning against Italy. If you watch the game, they weren't great. And
no, they let
Italy were very much
times.
In that game for most of it. And at one stage, it looked like Italy were going to get back into it.
Yeah.
And they got, a couple of late tries. It was I was only saying it to Pat there before the show, Italy are starting to remind me of France years ago, where they was all Jouet, they'll run, they'll play, they'll everything, but then they just don't have that structure about them or that coaching that's there. Go, okay, you can do all of that, but you need to have your bricks and mortar there, actually not let in silly tries and have a bit of structure there. But they don't have that.
Even last week, they were so narrow around the work with France. And I was if France were actually even playing at 50%, they'd absolutely annihilate us now. So, if they could get a bit of game management and a bit of really strict structure, especially around their defence.
They've got the players.
Yes,
how
absolutely.
How good was Caputo again? He's the best player in the world, as far as I'm concerned. Sorry, that's a stretch. But
he is.
Do you know what he is? He's the most entertaining player in the world to watch at the moment. And I'll go out on a limb and happily say that. Yeah. Because he's the only player at the moment where I'm when he gets the ball, what's he going to do now? Is he going to run? Is he going to step? Is he going to kick? Ah, he's up to me. Do guys. Go again. Get him the ball. He's brilliant to watch.
Yeah, no, he is. He's a rugby fan's dream,
Yeah, he is. He played absolutely class himself, a fullback in Menoncello on the wing for Italy. And then we had Fusco came on at nine. So they have loads of nice young fellas that are able to move the ball around. And they're making gaps in that England defence easy peasy. But as you're saying there, Jason, they seem to lack that kind of cohesiveness and the structure in their systems. And that's how England were getting a maul try against them and just going up by 7 points. And that's where they seem to be falling down. But that probably just comes with time. Italy have improved so much in the last couple of seasons. They're no longer the guaranteed wooden spoon where they're getting smashed. They're fighting every game. And to be within 31-14 points against England away in Twickenham is actually a really good result. So I do think Italy are in a good spot, but England seem to be kind of pulling it together. Do you think they're getting in a good spot?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they're just stripping it back. They're trying to get a lot of players. I do see your point about Steve Borthwick and what does he do now, when we kind of had this argument before he took on the role, he has such little time. So is his philosophy now just to get a lot of players just blooded now over the Six Nations, because he really has nothing to lose again? He knows what the elder lemons and the more experienced English players can do. So does he rest them and kind of keep them on the fringes now and just, get...
Yeah, is he trying to figure out his second string players?
That's what I think he's doing right now, because how else can he play it? Do you know, because it's he has the divvy nose, so now he has to kind of get those young players out and see what they can do on international stage.
How good are the finds of Jack Willis and Ollie Chesson?
Willis has been around a long time now, but he's just finally getting his chance.
He's only 25, though.
Yeah. But we know how good Jack Willis is, but he had problems with injury and stuff there. He was out injured for...
He was out
for a year and a bit, and he's over
in Toulouse now,
isn't he? Yeah, Toulouse signed him up when Wasp went under. But like for me, if I'm looking at England team again the weekend, I don't even give them a 1% chance against France or Ireland. I really don't. The way they're playing at the moment, I don't give them any hope. I think the Wales game, like, I mean, we probably put a team together and beat Wales at the moment, let's say, would we?
You heard it here you first.
You know what I mean? Let's be honest, like, with the way they're going at the moment. Yeah. Like, but, you know, I don't see much of them at all. Like, we said this time and time again, like, come a World Cup, England normally get their ducks in a row, but the Six Nations, they ain't going to beat France, they ain't going to beat Ireland, like.
Yeah, well, they're going away to Wales next week, or not in 2 weeks. There's a gap week in the Six Nations, and they're going over to the Principality. That would probably be not a highly spectacle game, but a good battle between the two of them because they're both struggling.
Both struggling, and if like I was Steve Borthwick, like there are three nice games he's opened up his championship with. So like if you look at the video reviews and all the errors they would have made and what style he wants to play, like he's going to have so much like to feed into his players. Like, and he's now a week to kind of give them breathing space and give that instruction and build towards. And like that will probably be a pinnacle game for them if you think about it.
It's a good target game for England, yeah.
Absolutely. So I'd be targeting all their goals based on the first two rounds' mistakes and where they want to see themselves against Wales. And then if you think now if they can get a good win against Wales and kind of slightly fix some of their problems and they build in a bit of consistency against France and Ireland, I don't think they'll beat us. But I think they could be a potential, like, imagine now coming to England, you have something to prove. Ireland are unbeaten now in the last round of the championship. They could be something. Again, I don't see them. It's Paddy's weekend. It's going to be, it's our destiny, to be honest.
Potential Grand Slam decider.
Yeah,
Everyone's booking off work already.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be.
I can't make it in that one day.
There's just going to be this black cape shrouded over Ireland, you know, because we're going in celebration. But yeah, I think that's where I'd be looking at if I was Steve Borthwick, to be honest. Just kind of building and using this now. And
the only thing I'd say on the flip side about that, and like I'm trying to give him a little more credit again, I'm throwing you as much rope as I can, Wales. That Wales and England game, right? No matter how bad their Six Nations is going, right? They have England at home. If they, like Gatland knows and the players know, if they beat England, then all of a sudden the fans are off their back because they don't care what happens Six Nations, like we beat England. Because they have that similar thing that we have. Like we've had that before in the past. We've had a poor Six Nations. We had that one there years back where Peter O'Mahony came on as a late, just when Heaslip got injured. And we were having a really bad run of games. And England were, I think England had already won the Six Nations. They're coming for a Grand Slam. And I think we finished third or fourth, whatever it was. But we beat England in the last game. And to us then it was a successful Six Nations.
All is forgiven.
That was, I remember that because that was Peter O'Mahony's like game because he was out for ages and Heaslip Stander was playing six, Heaslip was eight. And that was when, it was unfortunate that was Heaslip never played again because after that, pulled up that warm-up. Yep. But like we looked at that then as a successful Six Nations because we beat England. Yep. And that would be the same. And it drove us on after that.
It'd be a great result for Borthwick, I think, to go away to Wales and get a win there back-to-back, beating Italy, beating Wales away. Even though it's a poor Wales team, I think that's going to like solidify Steve Borthwick that he's doing something well there in England. Because people were starting to say that if they lost against Italy, that Borthwick would be out. And I was like, the last time. Yeah,
awesome. I think that will be the game of that week, to be honest, is England Wales. I think they'll be skin and hair flying, to be honest.
Yeah, because Scotland are away to France. I think if that was a reverse fixture, if France were going to Scotland, it'd be tough to win over in Scotland the way they're at the moment, because Scotland are fifth in the world. Finn Russell's playing out of his skin. They have a really good team, but they're going to play in France. I really can't see France losing that. What do you think?
No, not. They're ridiculously solid, you know, at home. And I think there's a different kind of vibe of French teams, whether it's Sean Edwards being in, but they're a lot more grounded, a lot more humble. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think they're going to take Scotland lightly. I think they will respectfully beat them, do you know, and they'll have their homework done. Absolutely. And they'll have something to prove, especially to the French people. It's not that they're fickle, but they expect a lot from their French teams.
Do you think they'll be hurt, Jason? Is like that's the first match France have lost in over 12 months. 14 games, something crazy like that. Like, do you think they'll be hurting?
I would say hurt. I would say more angry. I would say kind of roiled up, motivated. Like, they're not going to, like, there's no way they're going to say we can afford to lose two games in a row if we want to consider ourselves to be serious Rugby World Cup contenders. Mm-hmm. They can't, like, as good as Scotland they're playing, like, and they're back at, especially they're back at home for this game.
Yes.
France are at home, yeah.
I mean, they didn't know themselves. Like, I think, in a way, it's probably good for Scotland because, like, after getting the monkey off their back and get those two wins in a row, no one expects them to win in France. So maybe that might suit because that style of play is kind of like,
well,
we've nothing to pretty much lose here because no one expects us to win.
Yeah.
So like they were expected to beat Wales. They really were.
And there'd be some nice battles. The centre partnership, the wings, Van der Merwe, Penno. Like, there'll be some really nice individuals. The halfback pairing, you know, Dupont against Finn Russell, kind of. There'll be some nice one-on-one battles.
It'll be a good game. Absolutely. Yeah. Scotland aren't going to roll over.
And I think France will be very disappointed that, as much as they did get return when they came into Ireland's green zone, into their green zone against Ireland, they didn't really threaten our try line.
Not really.
Other than the Penno exceptional world-class try that was kind of...
That was just
created.
Like,
absolutely, yeah. Some quick thinking by Ramos, you know, flicking that back, and he just took his chances.
Yeah, other than that, we weren't really under too much pressure.
Nah, we weren't at all.
No.
You know, so they will be disappointed with that, considering. Do you know? They're, you know, Dupont's used to opening gaps. Entomac, probably the fact even that he couldn't get those crossfield kicks, which we saw a lot of, you know, to success with a number of teams over the weekend. Yeah, they'd be hurting. They will be hurting.
And you kind of said it there a while ago, Lindsay, is wanted to pick up on it, and that France have a respect for other teams about them now. I was working at the game on the weekend. I was interviewing fans. I interviewed a lot of French fans.
Oh, yeah.
And they were so respectful to Ireland. They were like, oh, Ireland are very good. I think they might win today, but there's a World Cup coming up.
Love the accent.
And like, I was just
is
like,
is there French in your DNA?
Yeah. and they were, I would have had the kind of... thought that French were very arrogant and stuff when it came to rugby, but they weren't. They were actually, they seemed quite worried coming over that they were going to lose, even though they'd been on this unbeaten run. So Ireland have been put up on that pedestal now.
Yeah.
And even though before I would have been like, oh, I don't know if we can sit up there, and like, we don't do well when we're out in front. I agree with what you both said earlier in that. I think we're good enough to be there now. We can be out in front, that we are the best team in the world, and we played like it. So I'm starting to be like, maybe we can win this World Cup.
I think that's funny, just as you were saying that, because I saw some like comments on New Zealand's page today. Someone was trying to say that, you know, like, the Six Nations is definitely far superior than Rugby Championship. No, like, just saying, it's a better tournament. And as we were saying earlier, like, the two best teams in the world were definitely playing the weekend. And you just, the comments, like, what are you talking about? New Zealand are going to smash you all come the World Cup. We're going to be back. Northern Hemisphere is still a crap rugby. That's why they've only won one World Cup out of all of them they've ever been played. Like, in fairness, that's England are the only team to have won it.
Yeah,
it's been Southern Hemisphere for all of that.
Yeah.
But, like, I think the tide will certainly turn this time around. I can't see past... I'm not going to go out on a limb here. I can't see past a Northern Hemisphere team winning the World Cup. I think it's going to be Ireland or France.
100%.
I can't see Ireland losing a game in the way they're playing at the moment. And we have all those five players that I mentioned at the start still come back in, like the Furlongs and the Henshaws and Gibson Park. Like, we still have unbelievable players to come back in. Like.
Top players. I think it'll be that, you know, very cliche, but I mean, first round against South Africa, I mean, it won't be... I think if we can get that win, it was a bit like Wales last week, it'll just set the tone for our tournament. And I would rather... Yeah, France.
I think we have the power to match South Africa, which we showed, but then we also have the speed and the skill to absolutely bamboozle them, to be honest with you.
And we found our kahunas now, so it's nothing.
We have a bit of everything, like, and there's such. We were so. That's what killed us in that 2019 World Cup going in, is we very much played one style of rugby, and it was very readable.
And we only had a starting 15.
And that was
it.
We have so many different ways of playing now that you don't even know what Ireland are going to do yourself. I'd say Andy Farrell's making it up on the go. He's like, let's do this now. We can do whatever we want. They're so well adversed, I think, in every area of the game and every position.
Yeah.
We're looking forward to the next Six Nations game. We're going away to Rome. We're playing Italy down in their beautiful stadium down
Actually,
there.
Actually, Pat said he was bringing us for a live show for that week.
Live show, I wish.
Greg, he flies first class now.
And he also has a bit of Italian in him. So he has
I'll work on my Italian accent for that one.
It's okay, we're fine. You just put in first class.
With that Italian game coming up, how do you think Ireland are going to look at that? Andy Farrell, is he going to play his... I'd say second string lads, even though it's kind of mean to call them second string. But do you think Casey will get a start? Do you think Ross Byrne will get a start? Do you think he'll give Bundy Aki his start back?
I think he's going to give players who are on the fringes and probably holding their hand up and just slightly not getting the nod, because as we all know in rugby, it's your jersey to lose. So the lads who he's been picking to start have not let him down. So I think maybe he's going to reward to keep the culture, keep the fight, keep the bite. And he has to use this game, I think, to give lads experience. You can't go through five games and not give lads experience to get, like, test rugby.
You think Jack Crowley will get a few minutes? That kind of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Where do see him of this game, possibly, without being disrespectful to the Italians, of leaving Johnny out. Like, he'll be there, he'd be round. He'd be, like, you saw Keith Earls doing the water and that experience in around the fringes. And I think he might do that with Johnny, because he kind of come off, obviously, a bit...
You got a dead leg.
Yeah. And I think right now we need to manage him. And I think the two lads are worth their weight now to give them a shot. I think Ross Byrne needs to start a game, and he needs to build that confidence that we saw the weekend.
You give him 80, or give him like 60.
I'd give him 60 and get Jack Crowley in. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What do you think, Jason?
I think the days are gone of like playing Italy and calling guys up for give me caps. Mm. But in saying that, I don't think we have any players in the squad at the moment that are give me caps.
Because not like that. Just such,
we've done that in the past. Like, you know, there's guys out there that have one cap against Italy, like, or two caps, both against Italy. And they're kind of giving around. Should we give them a go here and see if it's any good? Like, we don't have any players like that in the squad.
No.
There's like, of course, there's guys that are better than other guys, which is why you have a starting 15. But I think there's very much a core group of probably 24, 25 players there where you swap guys out and it doesn't make a difference. They're just as good.
Yeah.
You know, probably I would say the only real positions where you're kind of downgrading maybe is Tadhg Furlong or Johnny Sexton. Mm. But then again, look how good Beelan was the weekend. Look how good Tom O'Toole was the weekend. Look how good Ross Byrne was coming on. So like there is guys there. So I think
Dave Kilcoyne
he's gonna
well.
Yeah, Dave Kilcoyne. I think he's gonna make changes. I'd like to see Crowley at the very least get a spot on the bench. I think it's minutes because I think he's good enough. Not give me minutes. He's an absolute fantastic, outstanding talent that we want to see more of. And, you know, yeah, maybe Bunyaki needs minutes. So, like, Bunyaki's a proven lion. It's not like it's just give Bunyaki a run against Italy. It's Bunny bloody Yaki. So, and there's a lot of guys there. There's guys in the back three. Like, I mean, Jimmy O'Brien hasn't got a run out yet. Like, and we know Jimmy O'Brien is class. And Jimmy O'Brien will be brilliant against Italy.
And Gavin Coombs, you know, we're going to bring Gavin in. Do you know, they're lads who are well, were like, agree. So, if it was misconstrued, there's no pity caps. I think there's just lads who kind of need to. Probably need just that injection of confidence, a bit of game time. It's not anything, it's just to get them the experience. And I think, not to be disrespectful to Italy, but it'll be a chance to rest some of the bigger guys who've been starting. You know,
well, we're in that position now where we have the luxury of doing that and bringing on world-class players to start, like a Jimmy O'Brien, who's one of the best players in the world.
I think the weekend, when you think about it. So like we lost Dan Sheehan during the week, right? And then we lost Rob Herring early on. And then we were forced to bring on Ronan Keller as our third choice.
Like forced.
So we ended up with Ronan Keller. Like to look back that we lose our two hookers and then all of a sudden you've got Ronan Keller who was with the Lions over the summer. Like that's phenomenal.
And he hadn't played in over 12 months more for Ireland with the injury.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was very lucky to be having unbelievable players like that. So let's go on to pick our never stop competing moment of the week with Bank of Ireland. There was a lot of moments we could have picked from. I like James Lowe's. I like Gary Ringrose's tries. Mm-hmm. But I think it has to go to Anton Dupont's tackle on Mac Hansen.
Yep.
What do you think, guys?
Yeah, agreed.
It was some tackle. I've never seen anything like it. So Dupont, I know you're listening, brother. Well done. You get a never stop competing moment of the week together with Bank of Ireland. Now, before we wrap up, if you were to pick in World 15 right now, guys, how many Irish guys would be straight into that 15?
Oh, God.
Johnny Sexton, I think, is number
minimum
one.
Minimum five, anyway. I'd pick, Johnny Sexton.
Who else do you think? I'd have Tadhg Byrne in there. I'd have Furlong in there. Keenan. So that's four we've already in the team.
So out who of
the
do we whole go world. Sexton.
Doris is definitely in there.
Ah, Doris,
Render Fear's in there.
Yes, six.
We're six already out of 15 in the world.
What are you talking about? Whole Ireland.
This is a world 15.
Gary Ringrose is in there at the moment on current form. He's up there.
Yeah.
I mean, who else? I mean, he probably is. Lucan Uam.
That's a big argument there. Like,
it's tough on form at the moment.
Yeah. So we've six in there. Or is that seven we have?
Seven now, I think.
Who else? That's probably definitely.
Who do we say? Sorry, what did you say again? So we said we're starting front one. So we say, like,
oh yeah, sorry.
Like you probably, like Porter is up there in the argument, like, isn't he? I suppose, is he up there? Like, who's above Porter at the moment? Like you'd say maybe before the game, you would have said Sir Boy, maybe a couple of South African props. So he'd be up and he'd be in the conversation.
Well, this is like
not even an argument. Like they're in the world 15 guys.
I would have like possibly would have put Dan Sheehan in there before he got injured. Like,
well, look, the guarantees are Doris, Furlong, okay. Ringrose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Van der Flair, obviously, he's world player of the year.
Right, okay, Van der Flair. So that's four. What are we thinking of Sexton?
Yeah,
I don't know if I put Sexton.
Well, like Finn Russell's coming up. Who else have we got at 10?
You could have Beauden Barrett down in New Zealand.
Entomac. Huh?
You could have Beauden Barrett in there.
I wouldn't put Johnny in there, just want to say it.
You wouldn't put Johnny in as the starting out half in the world.
Not right now, probably, but world, no.
We're taking Johnny out. I hope he's not listening.
Well, DuPont listens to us, that's all I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
DuPont, well, he's your nine, like he's still the best in the world.
You gotta remember now, Johnny Sexton was nominated for World Player of the Year, guys.
But this is our show.
He's not taking it away from him, like, but I wouldn't.
So like he is
we're keeping him
seen as
we're keeping him grounded, to be honest.
One of the best tens in the world, if not the best in ten. He was the only out half that was in the nominations.
Fair enough. But I'd still I wouldn't put Johnny
in. I think well, you see, there's so much competition for him now, whereas the four we've just picked have like their standout. I don't think there's anyone kind of competing with them, really.
Okay. Fair enough, guys. Thanks very much for your insight. We're going to have to wrap that up there. It was a really good show, guys. Six Nations is well and truly live. We're only 2 weeks in, and it's been one of the best tournaments I've watched so far. And we've a gap week now, and then we're coming back. We're playing Italy, but there's also URC back next week. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a good one to watch. See Munster back at it and Leinster back at it. But until then, guys, thank you so much, Lindsay.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Thank you so much, Jason. And of course, thank you to you at home for listening. And a big thank you to Bank of Ireland, our sponsors and proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll catch you next week, guys, for the URC.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.